Stay tuned for The Lynn Show. Today, I'm going to keep talking about how we become who we really are and stop behaving in ways that don't serve us. I'm going to continue to talk about modeling, and in this show, I'm going to talk about how you can begin to change roles that you adopted early in your life that you either modeled or got assigned to you. In addition to that, I'm going to play an interview I did with the not only multi-talented three-range performer Cat Heffner, but the adorable, funny, interesting, dedicated Cat Heffner. So hang on. Here comes the show.
Hearing from an inner voice, finding choice where there's no choice, with gentle prodding from the voice. Oh, you really can. Deeper, deeper down from nowhere, sitting in my own soft lap, with all the time for us to chat, and my resources all on tap. Oh,
been listening, you know that I have been talking about family roles, how we become the person we think we are. I've been talking about the fact that we are more than we think we are, more than we've been behaving, more than we've been presenting ourselves as, more than what other people think we are. And that we can find that more and be it. In my book, When You Can, You Will, Why You Can't Always Do What You Want to Do and What to Do About It, I say that when you discover, no, that's not exactly right, when you integrate and are able to use the rest of yourself, the parts of yourself that you've been denying, it's as though you were a plane or a bird flying along on one engine or one wing, and suddenly another engine has revved up or another wing has come alive. And that sense of being able to do so much more, to be so much more, It's powerful and liberating and exciting and delightful, but it can also be scary and uncomfortable and, oh, what is it when you're not used to it, you know? Awkward, maybe. Anyway, it is the mission of this show to help you to recognize that you are more than you thought you were, and to help you to discover some of that more. And having discovered it, you figured out how to access it and use it. Of course, you can decide you don't want to also, but that would be your choice. Once you know, you get to make a choice. Now, it is my belief that most of us are acting without choice. We don't actually know there's a more to us. So, in the last few weeks, I've been talking about roles that we are playing, how we learn them in our family of origin, what contributes to our having adopted these roles, chosen to believe that this is the limit to which we are able. If you were listening to the week when I talked about the family pie, that was an opportunity to figure out what the roles are that get played in your system and which ones you were given. And in the last few weeks, I've been talking about modeling, how we copy our parents, or anti-model, how we deny the parent of the same sex and take on the characteristics of the opposite sex parent. And in this week, I am beginning to talk about how we can change roles if we have decided that a particular role is not serving us. If we've been the talkative one who's always made light of difficult situations, diffused distress, if there was that in our family, how we can stop the impulse to get in there and do that and take a break, be quiet. Or maybe we were the quiet one that was trying to hide in the background and let somebody else do all that stuff, and now we find that we have something to say and we want to be able to say it. So how do we change a role when we've decided that the role we've been playing is no longer serving us, and another role, perhaps one, probably one, that's being played by somebody else in the family is the one that would serve us better? So today I am going to talk about how you can begin to change the roles that you were assigned and become more of who you actually are. It was your family who taught you the roles you have to play in life. It was within your family that you forged your idea of who you had to be and who you'd better not be. It was your family's need for balance that determined your choice of roles, and it is their continuing need that still binds you to those roles, even if you're no longer living in that family, even if you don't have any contact with members of that family. But that isn't the only thing that's stopping you from changing. There are also conditions in your present life that may likewise be blocking your path to change. In addition to your birth family, there are probably now many other people in your life whom you've trained to expect you to be the person you've always been. Without realizing it, we instinctively duplicate the relationships we had within our family. Our friends, lovers, spouses, children, neighbors, employers, employees, they all become stand-ins for family members. We choose people who expect to be treated, pleased, protected, or abused in just the same way that our family members needed to be treated. And this guarantees that there will always be plenty of people in our lives who will be upset if we decide to abandon our role. Your spouse and children, your close circle of friends, your employer, employees, and colleagues, they make up your current family with whom you today establish balance. You may be out of touch with your original family, but you can't renounce your own need for balance. And as long as you believe that you can only play the role you played in your family, you're going to need others to play the roles you denied or disowned. The roles that were once played by your family members are now played by others. Ironically, in your attempt to unlearn or alter or expand the roles assigned to you by your family. You may have unexpected allies in the family. Other family members can sometimes be your best source of information and assistance as you struggle to reclaim your whole self. Siblings are often assigned opposite roles. You can see this if you did your family pie exercise. This means that each is unbalanced and that both need a quality that the other one has. This is what happened to Alan and Stephen. They're brothers who live in different states, and while they weren't antagonistic to each other, they didn't dislike each other, they weren't very close, and they rarely spoke, and they saw each other only at family functions. As the older one, Alan was responsible, dependable, caretaking, and all those things. At 48, his life consisted of a series of responsibilities: his business, his elderly parents, his current wife and child, his ex-wife and children, his ulcers, his migraines, his colitis. He was referred to me by his physician because his role was literally killing him. I encouraged Alan to call his brother, Steve, and talk about the trouble he was having throwing off this responsible role. Alan was reluctant. He'd always thought of Steve as a loser, certainly not somebody from whom he could learn anything. But, good boy that he was, Alan made the call. He was amazed to find Steve in a similar predicament, trying to change the role his family had assigned him as the dependent one. As the baby in the family, Steve was considered passive and helpless. At 42, he was in a dead-end job, married for the second time to a caretaking but domineering wife. Having gone into therapy in desperation, Steve had discovered his role was incapacitating him. The brothers' parents had needed a child to take care of them, that was Alan, and one for them to take care of, and Steve came in for that role. For many years, both children had felt burdened by their assigned roles and jealous of the other. Steve wanted Alan's good job, his competence, and his position as the family hero. Alan envied Steve's ability to just let stuff roll off his back and to be loved by their parents no matter how badly he performed in life. Steve needed what Alan had, the ability to do, and Alan needed what Steve had, the ability to let others do. But each one's role had been heavily reinforced by their parents, and even though their parents regularly encouraged Alan to slow down and Steve to speed up, both brothers instinctively knew that their parents wouldn't like it if they changed. Alan and Steve had a deeply satisfying conversation. They shared information about their childhoods, and they figured out how each came to adopt his particular role. Over the course of many such conversations, they became really good friends and allies in their individual struggles to become whole. And when the inevitable resistance came, when their parents complained that Alan didn't visit enough and that Steve had stopped confiding in them, they called each other to commiserate and gain the strength to hold their ground. As you can see from the example of Steve and Alan, families tend to polarize individuals in order to maintain balance. And this polarization encourages a favorite family pastime: gossip. Entire evenings, weekends, can be spent bemoaning Aunt Sally's flashy lifestyle or Brother Joe's drinking. These conversations with other family members may feel really good, but they only serve to confirm Aunt Sally's and Brother Joe's inadequate roles and to confirm the gossiper's caring or critical role. Instead of discussing, criticizing, or trying to change one another, however, you could consider becoming an ally with family members. Like Alan and Steve, you could actually help one another achieve a change and provide support in the face of the rest of the family's resistance. But this can only be done when, like Alan and Steve, both people want to change, see the change as desirable, are able to make the change, and to consider the great trait swap. The resistance of your families, original and current, or friends and colleagues, That's a very important obstacle to changing. But it's not the only one. Roles that you've been playing for a lifetime are stubborn and persistent, and changing them can mean contradicting yourself. So suppose the change you want to make is to stand up for yourself. Maybe there's a place in your life that requires you to be your own advocate. But all of your life you believe that standing up for yourself is an obnoxious trait that would get you in trouble or cost you in the affection or concern of somebody that mattered to you. If you have a lifetime of experience of being a passive person, you know all there is to know about being a passive person and nothing about being an assertive one. You don't know how you'll feel, what to expect in return, how others will react, or even how you will react. New life roles don't come with instructions. New life roles are all learned on the job. Consequently, they're never performed smoothly at the beginning. You must often make mistakes, be awkward, and do it wrong before you can do it right. Changing the way you are, your idea of yourself, the role you play in the world, is the most difficult habit to break. If the change you want to make requires that you alter an aspect of who you are, just the weight of habit can be enough to stop you. Also, such changes usually require a trait swap with one or more of your family members. And to do this, you must believe that you can be more than just who you are. You must question the merit of the trait you're giving up, value the trait you're taking on, and be willing to unbalance your family. Okay, so while you are thinking about what changes you might like to make in the roles you've been playing in your life, are you thinking about how you think about yourself, how you present yourself in the world, and whether that is who you really are? Or maybe you think that's who you really are, but you'd like to be different? So while you're thinking about that, the role that you're playing in the world and the one you played in your family of origin, and trying to wonder whether there's a role in your family that you could adopt, part of yourself that you could begin to express that might make your life more what you want it to be, while you're thinking about that, I'm going to play the second half of my show, which is pretty much always an interview with an artist from my series called Anatomy of an Artist, in which I am pursuing people who make their living and or their life with their art. People who, at least in this area of their life, are actually who they are. When you see a painter or a writer immersed in their work, when you see a performer up there completely at one with their performance, then you know that at least in this area of their lives, these people have found themselves. And that's a glorious thing and part of what I am hoping for all of us. So today I'm going to air an interview with a woman who says she was born into her music, and she will tell you all about that. And before I play my interview with Kat Hefner, I'm going to play a cut from her CD. It's But Not For Me, The Standard, which she does as only Kat Hefner can do it. And following the playing of the tune, I'm going to move right into my interview with Kat. So sit back and enjoy. Here is Kat Hefner doing But Not For Me.
For me, with love. guarantee. I was a football and get that way. Hey-ho, alas and all, so lack-a-day. Although I can't dismiss the memory of his kiss, I guess he's not the one for me.
Is really my pleasure. Oh. I have watched you many, many times over the years.
Oh, my.
Well, I've seen you do pretty much everything. I mean, it's...
Wow.
You know, okay. You are a remarkably versatile performer. So I've been looking forward to this for a long time, and I'm really, really glad you're here.
My pleasure, and thank you again.
You're welcome. So I haven't really explained. I do this series called Anatomy of an Artist.
Hmm.
And I interview people who I believe are making their life or their living with their art. Mm-hmm. And I know that you have made a life with your music. I know that's true.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
So, and I always ask people the same question, which is, how did it happen? How did you find it? How did it find you? How did it start?
I was born into it. I come from a musical family, a music coming out of a poor's type of family, from church to doo-wop, you know.
Performers?
Oh, yes.
Really?
Oh, yes.
Who?
My father was in a group called the Pacers, and my Uncle Frank was the songwriter, and they were on the same... label as Jimmy Beaumont and the Skyliners,
uh-huh.
You know, that was around mm-hmm. that time, and Bobby Vinton
mm-hmm.
and all that type of stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So there was that, and we would listen on the radio, starting out with the church, you know, because they had the James Five, it was called, the group, and it was a gospel group, and oh my goodness, those guys could sing. So we started listening to them on the radio, and then they were on the Clark Show.
Wow.
Oh yeah, yeah. Nice and sweet.
Oh, that was great.
And then my mom, my mother sings or plays for the same church as a pianist for over 59 years.
My goodness.
She still plays the piano and is the music director. She'll be 70 next year.
So she's been playing since she was 11?
Very young, yeah. Oh, yeah.
Oh, my God.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Well, so you didn't have much choice.
No. She would have us line up, you know, on the sofa. There was five brothers and myself.
Wow.
And each of us would entertain each other, you know, and applaud each other. Okay, you had to come up with something that you had to do. And as we grew, we had a band, my brothers and myself. And Uncle Frank was our manager. And whenever he would write a song, he would teach it to me, and I would sing it for him.
So you were his demo singer?
I guess so.
Good to have it in the family. You didn't have to pay anybody to do his demos, right?
I guess so. Come to think of it.
My God, he was lucky to have you.
Well, I was lucky to have him. My mother collected every song that you can think of, from 78s to 33s and a third, and then the 45s and all that, you know. Mm-hmm. And then Stephen decided that he just picked it up where he was going to be a DJ, and he's still a DJ. And all different types of music, it doesn't matter what it is, you know. And that was the same thing with our my brother and our band. We had five-part harmonies.
Wow.
And my youngest brother, Melvin, played the drums. Stanley plays a mean B3, Hammond B3 organ.
Woo!
And he used to go down, my mom would take him down to the Hill District in Pittsburgh, right? And it was at the Crawford Grill, where Jimmy McGriff and Jack McDuff and Jimmy Smith and Shirley Scott and Arthur Prysock.
My God, heavy hitters here.
Oh, I'm
right?
Serious.
Oh,
I'm
yeah.
Taking yeah. it to the roof. It's just amazing. Just amazing. And so Stanley has fashioned not only with his style, but when he heard Jimmy Smith play the sermon, that's where he knew that he was going to play the organ. And it's just amazing. He sat down like he had always played it. It was just...
It was natural.
Natural. Mm-hmm. And then when they had their band, they asked me to join. And that's how it started, other than me singing in church. I was a soloist.
Where are you in the birth order?
I am the oldest and youngest daughter.
Oh, God.
I'll take a drink of water.
Yeah, really? Really? What a job. Well, it's clear, watching you, that music is your passion. I mean, that's where your heart is. Well, how did you proceed in your life?
To tell you the truth, I never thought of going into the music as a...
career?
As a career. I didn't. I thought of maybe nursing or something like that. Yeah. Once our group with my brothers stopped...
Why did that stop?
I missed it because my brother... was drafted into, you know, went to Vietnam. Three of them went to Vietnam and two came back.
Oh, I'm so sorry.
Yeah. Keith was 19 and 6'9 and a half. That's another story.
Yes. So the band?
The band, they stopped, you know, and I missed it, and then I was asked if I would join another group, and I was a little afraid, you know, to...
How old were you?
I don't remember. I really don't. I'm one of those people that don't think about age and all, because, I mean, how can I when I'm 35 and holding? You know what I'm saying?
I mean... I do. I understand the dialogue.
And it just stays there.
There, yes. And I know.
So
okay, never mind. Forget I asked. And so somebody asked you to join the band, and you were a little apprehensive.
Right. When they said that, you know, that we might even have a chance, because at that time they were working in Vegas, I'm like, that got my attention. Mm-hmm. You know, there might be an opportunity to do that. And I was one of the first blacks to perform in that particular place. Can you believe it?
No.
yeah. And they liked it. They came. They liked it. And I could see that I was giving love. I was giving and I was receiving. And to have that, it was just something that I can't describe except, wow.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, if I can touch someone to make just about everyone be on a positive, you know, note.
Mm-hmm. You make everybody feel good.
Then that's a good thing, mm-hmm. you know.
Yeah, everybody feels good and then so do you.
Yeah, yeah, really. Mm-hmm. And I guess I would say that's how it began. And then others started approaching me, you know, about singing, can you do this, will you do this? Type of thing.
So is it like, you know, to be in somebody else's band or to do a recording or to just do a gig or?
All the above. Mm-hmm. And then I was asked to go on the road to be in a show band. And that's how I came into Florida mm-hmm. with a show band, BHQ. The first time I saw a beach and the first beach that I was on, it was just one of the most beautiful beaches in the world. The Sand Key Beach, mm-hmm. and because I used to walk across the road there and sit there by myself and have lunch. You know, like a crane was there mm-hmm. wanting to eat my food, but was afraid to come over and say, hey, how about a nibble? You know, that's when I started developing into what you would call a showstopper.
Well, talk a little bit about that. Did that develop sort of naturally, or did you just notice that you were stopping the show, or did you have to do something new, or was it just that this is what you did naturally and it had that impact?
The band leader would have a pattern of how they wanted their songs to go, and if there was a certain song that I felt that I would like to deliver, I would. At that time, I looked a lot like Donna Summer, and so I would do a tribute to Donna Summer as well. And MacArthur Park was out, and I did MacArthur Park. And I remember singing that song, and while I'm singing the song, I guess I had so much passion. This lady scared me with her reaction to it, because she was like, I almost had her in tears. And she had her lips started, I was like, I'm like, oh my gosh. You know, and I didn't realize I was giving that much passion out.
Yeah.
You know.
Or that you were having that big of an impact.
Yeah.
That you could. Yeah.
So that was interesting. It seems like just certain things happen, like they say everything happens with its own season. And so I did the shows with the show band. And I fell in love with Florida, so I decided to stay down here. And the rest of the band went up north.
Really? You said, I'm sorry, I'm staying here, bye-bye?
Wow. Sort of, yeah.
Well, that was pretty brave.
Yeah. I went back up to Pittsburgh, and it was freezing. I'm trying to walk across the street and falling down. And I said, this time next year, I'm going to be living in Florida. And it was. You know,
wow.
Yeah. I came down, and that's when I started being asked to be a headliner.
Down here? Well, in Florida.
Yeah, like at the Copperhead Lounge in Innisbrook. I did that for quite some time. And then I traveled to different parts, with the show band. We traveled, was asked to do cruises, so I've done the cruises and been able to see, do a couple of world tours, which was great.
Oh, yeah.
You know, to be able to,
You mean on the boats?
Yeah, on the cruise mm-hmm. ships. Mm-hmm. And see some of the countries.
Yeah. Did you have an agent?
Yes. For that, I had an agent, from out of Vegas, but it was weird to have an agent out of Vegas but never sing in Vegas. That was interesting. But I would entertained a lot for the Japanese, so, you know, I learned a little bit of Japanese. どうもありがとう。
はい。
おざいはい。It's true about the cameras.
What do you mean? Oh, really?
Oh, man, they were just flashing all over the place. You know, they were really flashing those cameras.
Where did you do that? I mean, where were they?
On the cruise ships and also in Tokyo. I stayed in Tokyo for about 3 months and I performed there at a 5-star hotel, the Hyatt Shinjuku. Shinjuku is a very posh place. It was a sweet experience. And before I did that, my longest stint at a club was at the Euphemia.
Oh yeah, right here.
On Longboat Key.
Mm-hmm.
Darcy and Ray Arpke. They're fabulous people and they have a wonderful, wonderful restaurant and you can't beat their desserts and
no.
They're duck and their paper and their pepper steak, so you know there goes some more free
advertising
right
for,
there because
right.
It comes from the heart. But I was there for I think about five and a half years.
Wow.
And that's where the birth of my first CD came out, because of the songs that were requested. And I named my first CD By Request.
Oh, very nice.
Intimately, Cat mm-hmm. Hefner. Mm-hmm. Because it was an intimate setting with
yes.
the, you know, the settees and
yeah.
and all that they have in the hayloft.
Yeah.
And it was always like that.
Who played nice. For you?
There was a gentleman by the name of Skip Cook mm-hmm. at the time. And then when I went, when I started developing my own band, most of the time I have Kenny Drew Jr. with me,
mm-hmm.
or Richard Drexler. Richard Drexler was my pianist for my first CD. The second CD was a live concert that we did with the All-Star Band, and how I got involved in the All-Star Band, dear friend John Lamb, who was with the Duke Ellington Band, I think. Wonderful, wonderful man, and talent, you know, and the drive that you get from him, you
yeah.
know, and Kenny, and Eddie Graham. All of these guys have their own history, you know, strong, strong history. And to be surrounded with that and feel that energy and
yeah.
that drive and that passion, you just can't beat it. You get lost in the music.
Yeah, it
know.
Carries you.
Yeah, and, you know, I love it. So, I have a couple of projects that were, you know, I have in my mind and I am developing. That I would
Can you
like
tell?
To bring. I don't want to do that right now.
Oh, all right.
Nah.
You're going to do it here?
I'd like to kick it off here. One will be gospel.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know.
Well, that's the other thing about you. I mean, I've never seen you do gospel, but I have seen you do jazz, and I have seen you do R&B. And,
mm-hmm.
I mean, there just doesn't seem to be anything you... Well, I haven't seen you do country, but...
Oh, I like country.
I bet you could, right?
I like country. Mm-hmm. One of my favorite is when I do Help Me Make It Through the Night
uh-huh.
with Chris Christopherson.
Yeah,
I
yeah,
love
yeah.
that song.
It's a great.
And some of Patsy Cline.
I was just going to say Patsy Cline.
It's very nice, but I also liked Linda Ronstadt. Blue Bayou.
Mm-hmm.
I always loved to sing Blue Bayou.
So you did this concert album with the All-Star Band.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. That was a sellout. Concert, and I also started getting into I've done a lot of work with the Sarasota, the Jazz Club of Sarasota,
mm-hmm.
I think I even did a calendar for the Sarasota Jazz Club. That was really neat. In Selby Garden, and they had this classic car brought there, and here I am sprawled across the classic car. I think we had to get up like 5 in the morning or something. Woo! But that was a lot of fun. And the Sarasota Opera House.
Mm-hmm.
I was with the West Coast Orchestra, and that was Jack Lapato. And he had a 18-20 piece band. And so with that band, I met another a conductor, Robert Boyd, Bob Boyd, and I was introduced to Warren Covington. I think his hit was Tea for Two. And Connie Haynes. Mm-hmm. Connie Haynes became my mentor.
Really?
Yes. Yes.
Wow.
Yeah. Snooty little cutie. She's really great. We just lost her last year. And
how did that work, her mentoring you?
Learning how to put on a show, the learning the formula. There's a certain type of formula, and she helped me put my show that is on Cat Hefner Live. It was great. It sold out, and we got standing ovation. You know, and I think that's a concert that could go around the world. It seems like people are kind of like comfortable where they are,
mm-hmm.
and they don't want to spread their rings and stretch. There's no moss under my feet, and music is a universal language,
yep.
and so it should go all around the world. You know. And take it there, and finding that person that believes in you is not easy. Finding a person that has the passion and respects the passion that you have without anything other than let's make music, you know, let's make money, and stay out of my pants.
Yes, I'm sure.
Type of thing.
I'm sure. Yeah, it's a tricky business.
It is a very tricky
business. It's a tricky business.
And it's hard to find people that you can truly trust.
I was just going to say, it's not filled with the most trustworthy and the most honorable of folk. I mean,
but there are some ones that, you know, that I have been allowed to cross paths with, and who knows?
Mm-hmm.
But I believe prayers are answered.
Yeah. So you're developing things that you could take around, and that could happen in the near future.
I'm ready.
Yeah, you're
ready. Let's just say that I'm ready, and I would love to do a music score to a movie.
You mean to record?
To record? Oh yeah, I would love to record a song for a movie or movies, voiceovers,
mm-hmm.
or commercials and stuff like that. You know, I feel that.
Well, you certainly have what it takes to do it. If that were all,
mm-hmm.
you would be doing it now.
For a while, that's all I did was just the music.
Mm-hmm.
And now I am also assisting surgeons that I find out are also musicians. It's so pretty cool.
Yes. Yeah.
Randall Morgan. He's
right.
an orthopedic surgeon. You
yeah.
know, and I've assisted him in the OR. You know, and
you guys don't break into.
And there's
Eagle
like,
Mountain High or something.
No. There was a surgeon that was assisting in the OR not too long last week, and it was so cute because. We started singing Carol King tunes. He said something. He says, follow me. And I went, I will follow him. Follow him wherever you may go. And he went, he looked up at me and he went. He kept on selling and listening to all of us. The girls just started, everybody started singing the songs, you know, and then, and it was really, really fun. But, you know, I've really been blessed to know all these different types of music. Because of my mom, there was so much different types of music, and my grandfather played the saxophone. And just the different music of listening, because we had a big family, you know, the aunts and uncles and all that. And I think my grandmother had 34 grandchildren, 43 great-grandchildren, and 3 great-great. you know, before she passed. We're getting ready to have a family reunion, and I'll just be looking and saying, oh my gosh, who's that?
Who do they go with?
Yeah.
Right? Who do they belong
to?
Right.
Yeah,
right.
But listening to their music, you know, and watching my aunt and them talk about how Aunt Dorothy loved George Harrison's teeth and the Beatles. Can you imagine? Yeah, I think he has the prettiest teeth. What? Everybody else is talking about somebody being cute and you're talking about someone's teeth? I said, oh, Aunt Dorothy. But she was like, I would say that Aunt Dorothy is, and still to this day, is the Emily Post of the family.
Oh.
And so we learned to be proper.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, and that's where I was taught to appreciate that I was going to be a tall person.
And not
walk with books on my head and all those type of things to get this.
And be proud of it.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's great.
Yeah. So, you know, in the different things that I've done, I have modeled and done runway and such. And went up to New York City and with the International Modeling Talent Association, and I brought back 6 awards.
Mm.
Yeah, that was really, really pretty neat. You know, I think there were like 900 ladies that had sent in their recordings and such, and through the you know, come on, you ought to enter. I placed first.
Wow.
First place. When I just go over everything that has happened, it's really, 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 really nice. Really,
yeah,
nice.
It's a very, very rich.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you've had so many different kinds of experiences. Pretty much anything one can do with performance, you have.
I haven't been on Broadway yet.
Okay, have you done musicals?
I have done some, but...
Have you thought of doing them here?
But I don't know if I don't know. I guess I could do it.
Certainly you could do it.
You know, it takes up a lot of time.
I was actually, you sort of read my mind. I was wondering, do you have flexibility in the surgery part of your life?
I work at a day surgery center. So if I want to go to California or over to Europe for the weekend, why not? You want to take me to everything? Let's go. No problemo.
Uh-huh.
The flexibility is there. And they are appreciative of my talent, and I don't take advantage of it because I do like the fact that I am helping others to get well. One thing that I would like to do is, they have different organizations. They go out. In fact, some of the surgeons that I work with, they will take maybe a week or two out of their year and go to various third worlds, like Africa or Haiti, and help where the people... They did surgery with flashlights. You know, we take it for granted what we have here.
Right.
But there are people, even in this country, that, you know, they need teeth pulled, you know, so to assist an oral surgeon, I can do that. Gynecology, I can assist in that. If someone needs cataracts taken out, I can assist, you know, with eye surgery. Appendicitis and something like that. Yeah, I can do that. They had to have an amputation, but yet it was going to save their life. I can do that too.
So are you saying that if a surgeon that you worked with was going, you would like to go along?
Or any surgeon, you know, yes, I have the credentials that I could go with a team, a missionary team,
right,
and assist them giving back.
Yeah, so that's another thing on the list, right?
Another passion on the list.
Another project.
Yeah.
Right.
And while I'm doing that, you know, I can sing at a church, spread the love.
So I like to ask people, If there's anything I didn't ask you that you'd like to tell me, and anything you want to say about what it's like to make art and art the basis of your life, or to live a life that is informed really by your art?
I think that the club owners here in the Sarasota area should respect the artists just a little bit more than what they do. It's a hard craft. We can bring the people in. That's what they're craving for, the businesses, you know, to get those snowbirds here. There was a time when you also had the Canadians that came in at a certain mm-hmm. time of the year.
Yeah,
and the Germans
came
in
a certain
time,
and the British came in.
Yeah,
right.
And so that was that steady roll.
Right.
But don't forget about the people that do live here.
That's right.
Okay?
Yeah, right.
When they leave, hello, leave, you know, let us stay, because we busted our asses.
Right.
To bring the people in for you.
Right.
To make your money.
Yes.
Let us continue to make our money and make a means
to survive.
Life.
Right, to survive.
Right. Let us, you know, stay, because the people, once the people leave that are the snowbirds, they'll come back. But there's people that are saying, okay, hey, we can get in now, so, okay, where did you say you are?
Mm-hmm. And then
and you're not
no
there.
Right.
You know, don't get scared. You know, I that's one thing that I loved and respect about Ray Arpke and Darcy Arpke of the Hayloft.
Mm-hmm.
She says, if you're going to do something, go on and do it. You know, keep it going, because the people will come because they know that you're
there. That you're
going to
be there, that's right.
Don't be fickle.
Right.
You know. Be faithful.
Yes.
Be faithful throughout and in and out of the season, and it will come to you. It will come to you. Just.
Well, yeah, but you build the following.
You have to build
right.
the following.
You build the following.
You
right.
build the following.
And if you stop, it's as you say. If you stop, you just stop the
stream. You
right.
stop the flow, and then you may not get those people back. It's a business. It is a business. And for many, it's a lifestyle, you know, and things have changed. But I'm not a scaredy cat, you know. I'm a cat. I'm a cat, you know, with the 9 lives or however many the Lord wants me to have. But that gets my goat.
Mm-hmm.
That bothers me. You know, I just think that there should be a code of honor.
Yeah.
Even amongst the musicians, there should be a code of honor. When you put yourself out like that, you are vulnerable.
That's right.
You are vulnerable. You're laying your passion out there. If you lay your passion out, then you're laying out your heart.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and heaven forbid, a piece of your soul.
Mm-hmm.
And that is not to be taken by anyone.
No, but it's, of course, what makes you a compelling performer. If you don't do that, then you're just not interesting.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
it's
so
like a song, body and soul.
Yes. Well, but so it's a kind of a mixed blessing. I mean, you know, that you can do it
mm-hmm.
is what makes you a compelling performer. But, of course, it puts you at risk.
Oh, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Well, we are grateful that you do it. And we... And I know that I speak for everybody who's ever heard you. Hope that you continue to, and that you are honored for what you do.
Well, thank you very much.
And you never know.
You never know.
It ain't over.
It ain't over till it's over.
That's right.
It ain't over till the fat lady sings.
That's right.
And, you know, I've been a size 4 to a size 18, you know, after taking medication. And I'm not fat anymore, but she's still singing.
Yes.
You know,
she's still singing.
I'm singing. I love to play with the boys in the band. That's that's one thing I love to say. And it's an honor to work with the people and the men and the ladies that I've had a pleasure of working with and meeting people like you.
Oh, well,
this is
you.
A pleasant surprise.
Thank
and a blessing, so thank you.
Thank you very much, Kat. This was lovely.
You're welcome.
And there you have it. The not only screamingly talented, but delightful, interesting, charming, hardworking Kat Heffner. And if you want to get in touch with Kat, you want to hear more of her stuff, you want to see pictures of her with famous people, you want to get a hold of her CD, you can do that at Kat Heffner. I'm giving you the wrong thing. It's www.kat, K-A-T-T, Heffner, H-E-F-N-E-R. That's one word, Kat Heffner, K-A-T-T-H-E-F-N-E-R.com. That's, of course, her website. And if you want to get a hold of more of Kat's work, and I can't imagine that you wouldn't, that's how you get it. You go up on her website and say, where do I see you, and how do I hear about you, and how do I get your CD? So that brings me to the end of yet another show, and I want to say thank you yet again, as I always do, to Josh Hackney, who's my IT guy, and who makes it possible for me not only to sound as good as I can, and to correct whatever goes wrong, but to put things in the shows that I am unable to figure out how to do. So, as I always say, if you have any issues that are computer, IT, electronics, recording related, you want Josh Hackney, and you should go up on my website, which is, of course, thelynnshow.com. THELYNNESHOW, thelynnshow.com. Say, I want Josh, and I will get him for you. And so here we are at the end of the show, and here I am hoping once again that you've heard something that you can use in this show, something that interested you or amused you or entertained you or just something that brings you back. Because I'll be here again next week, same time, same station. And I sure hope you will be too.
You see, I'm getting older. My hair is turning gray. Oh, you see my face and figure. I've both seen better days. Well, I won't be retired. I won't slip out of sight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I just keep returning like some goddamn boomerang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. You see that I have had my shot. My time has come and gone. Oh, won't I please get off the stage? Let someone else get on. Well, I won't be relegated or leave without a fight. No, I will not go gentle into that good night. I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Life's a bell I keep on ringing, not a chime that I once rang. You may think it's unseemly. Well, I don't give a dang. No, I won't go with a whimper. I am going with a bang. Rising from the ashes every chance I get.
I may be running out of time, but it ain't over yet. 'Cause me and Sister Phoenix, we won't give up the flight, no, no. We will not go gentle into that good night. And I won't go with a whimper. I'm going with a bang. Life's a song I keep on singing, not a tune that I once sang. I may not be as juicy, hell, but I still got some tang. So you won't hear me simper. I may have gotten limper, but I won't.